It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
And the fear, to 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 the fear, and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Streams, Phoenix.com. James Corbett, it's been a few weeks, been a while, and Christmas and New Year's and traveling and such and stuff, and I'm glad to have him back on so we can get all caught up and it's ready to go into 2020, which I think is the year. James, help me out here, man. Is it the year? And what do you think we mean by the year?
Oh, it's the year, all right. This is the year. And for people who want my take on this, I would suggest they go back to my recent International Forecaster editorial on the 2020s, a peek at the decade ahead, because I think the 2020s have been set up for a while to be part of the coming New World Order. And essentially, you'll notice that there's a lot of 2030s on the agenda. For example, Agenda 2030. You'll notice that Saudi Arabia has their Vision 2030. I believe the Belt and Road Initiative that China is launching has some 2030 end dates in mind. There's a lot of things that are apparently going to happen during the 2020s. And in my mind, it all swirls around technocracy and the fulfillment of the technocratic vision. That is going to merge man with machines and all of that kind of pie-in-the-sky nonsense that is going to be used essentially as a lever and a tool, surprise, surprise, for the dictators and would-be authoritarians to have more control over our lives.
So you think 2020 is the, it's just, if we're going to do 2030, we've got to get started 2020. We're going to rock and roll and whatnot.
Essentially, yeah. And one of the things that I point out in that editorial is that the Bank of England and others are citing research that says that we're going to need $90 trillion of investments into the green energy infrastructure over the course of the next decade in order to meet this magical goal of dialing the global thermostat down below that 2-degree rise that we know is dialed in there with carbon dioxide. It's going to require $90 trillion of investments from the G20 over the next 10 years. Do you think they're going to start amping that up this year? I certainly think if they want to get anywhere in the ballpark, they're going to have to start going crazy this year.
You know, that's another thing is the sun. We started with this back in 2005, 2006, around in there. We had a astrophysicist, a female, I can't remember her name, from Harvard, and I was talking to Professor Mike Ball, and he goes, Tim Ball, and he goes, yeah, I know who she is. Her name is blah blah blah. She got excommunicated from everything after, and yada 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 yada. I'm going, really? Okay. Well, yeah. How's she doing now? Well, I don't know. Not too well, you know. But she called it. She says it's the sun. It's going into a quieter phase, and now it's the quietest it's been in hundreds of years. So I'm going, you think it might have something to do with that thermonuclear ball in the sky, maybe just a little bit, you know? So I don't know. Are they going to be able to perpetuate this global warming thing? Because by 2030, it might not be that hot.
Well, you notice it's not global warming anymore. It is climate change, or climate emergency is actually the newest one that they're trying to push. Because, of course, you thought this was all about warming? No, it can be cooling, it can be snow, it can be drought, it can be floods, it can be absolutely anything. So they've just changed the nomenclature so that now no matter what happens, it is due to you and your use of energy, you greedy human being. But just to back up what you're saying, NASA itself, for its solar activity forecast for next decade, favorable for exploration, talking about the upcoming Artemis missions and all that, is noting that the forecast for the next solar cycle says it will be the weakest of the last 200 years. And that does have profound implications for the climate and the way things are trending. So yes, I think the people who have been pushing the alarm on the Earth is going to explode, is heating up so much, are going to have egg on their face. But they've already
not going to change anything. They're going to do it anyway.
Exactly. They've already got it baked into the cake. They're going to say, no, warming, we meant cooling. We meant whatever happens, it's because of you.
Yeah, that's why they changed it to climate change. No. It's like there'll be some temperature today.
The temperature will not be the exact precise same as it was yesterday. Thus, you are to blame.
Yeah, I didn't know this until recently, but there was an 8-track of a comedy skit. There was a guy, he goes, the hippy-dippy weatherman. Yeah, dude, there'll be some weather today. That was George Carlin. I didn't know that from back in the day. So this is your peek into the decade ahead, and certainly 2020, they're going to do what they're going to do, and they're starting it now, and they're putting their foot to the metal, and we're going to see what's up.
Yeah, essentially, yes. And on every front, and in every agenda, but most of them swirl around in one way or another, swirl around the technocratic ideal. So I talk about transhumanism, for example, and I start that with a couple of bookends from 2011, which was the creation of the Oculus Rift, which of course gave rise to that wonderful picture that we all saw of Mark Zuckerberg wandering around that audience full of people with the things strapped to their faces, and he's wandering around with his big grin on his face. And then 2019, the end of the 2010s, was, of course, Elon Musk and his big Neuralink presentation. Oh, yeah, you know, this company I've started, we're already getting underway about the brain-computer interface, and we're hoping for FDA approval for human testing starting in 2020. So that's coming.
Did you watch that presentation about how they're actually stitching electrodes into your brain?
I saw the highlights or lowlights of that presentation. I didn't watch it front to back.
Oh man, they're way further along than I thought. It's direct Matrix crap, man. This is amazing. I mean, it is kind of amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
Amazing. I mean, it's scary as hell.
That are being made would blow people's minds if they were unleashed it all at once, which is precisely why they unleash a little bit at a time, just to prepare you. There's a lot of sci-fi predictive programming that goes on to prepare you.
Oh yeah, television programs, movies, they gotta get you all up to speed, man.
Exactly.
Begging for it. I want, pick me, I want to be the video game master.
Yeah. Another big agenda item that we're going to see pushed specifically this year, but in the 2020s generally, is space. And it's going to be framed around space exploration and everything, as I just said, with NASA talking about, you know, the Artemis missions and all this, getting people prepared for that. But what is the real agenda behind that? The ultimate real agenda is the weaponization of space. And that is, I think, the final frontier for the military. And we see that not only with the creation of the Space Force, the first new branch of the U.S. military in 70 years or 60 years, whatever it is, but also, as others have pointed out, Russia has already had some version of Space Force since the 1990s. China has had one rolled up in their PLA, their People's Liberation Army, for the last 4 years. And NATO, for people who missed it, blinked and missed it during that big NATO brouhaha conference they had just last month, you might have missed, NATO declared that the outer space is now part of NATO's operational domain. And they are now preparing to, I guess, fight.
Oh, NATO needs to claim some space? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly right, man. I guess the North Atlantic now includes outer space. Why not?
Okay, now this.
There's a lot of stuff in that regard.
I just saw this. It's all blown up. Secret Russian spy satellite explodes in space, and it may have been deliberate. This is yesterday. Do you know anything about it? I didn't even look.
I only saw the headline. I didn't look into it. But it certainly does line up with a lot of things we've seen, including, I think, India shot down one of their own satellites to prove that they are able to do so. And China has done that in the past. It's one of the things that signals you're one of these space-age countries, is that you can shoot down satellites. And you might as well start with your own just for the demonstration purposes. Yeah. But of course, the threat is always there. We're going to shoot down the Starlinks or whatever.
You know, this brings up Davi got here yesterday. So he's here for a couple of weeks and we're working on some more letters. And the next two that we're doing on for PiratesWithoutBorders.com is real property. You know, like I own land. And then we want to continue with the vaccine thing, Dr. Idris Barber. It's instead of from a doctor's perspective, now it's going to be from a patient's perspective. They found pirates, you know, escaping the crown's notions and potions kind of thing. And so we're working on, we're developing that storyline now. But the one thing that we talked about, and I wanted to make sure that he got in, was we're going to space and government's not invited. You know, Widget saw Genie. You know, we're going to space and government's not invited. That doesn't mean they don't invite themselves. The mindset of Space Force is that, okay, well, who owns the moon? I just go and I plop in. I got Valley of, and I got a nice observatory, and I, you know, make a lot of energy, and I get helium-3, and I got a business going on or something. I'm the lithium crystal miner of who cares, okay? If I go to Mars, or if I get an asteroid that's, you know, palladium or something like that, what role does the government have? So we need to, you know, kind of dissect it down to its nucleus here on planet Earth to where even if you doubled the land mass, they would lay claim to all of it. If you have a island from volcanic activity off the coast of Italy, boom, there's like a few acres of land just pops up. You know, I run out there in my rowboat and a flag, it's mine. Is it mine? I mean, you know, it's just, and the mindset that anyone has land somewhere that they have to do this agenda, whatever the hell it is, that you can't fully own it, that you can't use it the way you want, and that you got to have a permission slip. This concept, we need to drill down so when we do go to space, we're not taking that concept with us. And I still, we're working on, I mean, just this afternoon, we were sitting there throwing ideas back and forth of how do we verbiage, you know, give verbiage to this concept that just because there's, because if there was only monkeys on it, they wouldn't care.
You're 53 years late. The Outer Space Treaty, formerly the Treaty on Principles Governing the Activities of States in the Exploration and Use of Outer Space, including the Moon and Other Celestial Bodies, was entered into force in October of 1967. So it's been on the books for 53 years already, and it's now signed on by 109 countries.
Yeah, I didn't sign it, so they can kiss my ass.
Yeah, exactly
so,
right.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting. You can go to the United Nations Office for Outer Space Affairs. Yes, there is such a thing at UNOOSA.org. You can read the text of this treaty, and its main takeaways, at least here in the wiki summary, is it prohibits the placing of nuclear weapons in space. It limits the use of moon and all other celestial bodies to peaceful purposes only, and establishes that space shall be free for exploration and use by all nations, but that no nation may claim sovereignty of outer space or any celestial body. So that's at least the treaty that people have signed on to. So.
Well, that is no government, no nation or something, but I guess I can claim property right with my ion cannon. I mean, you know, I go, this is mine, thus saith the barrel of this. I mean, you know, so this is, we're thinking, yeah, any input you could have, even if you something doings on your mind, you know, later, send me an email or something, because we're going to be working on this for a couple weeks.
Well, I think you should look at that treaty at any rate to see what they say about it.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Well, I don't want to, of course, but I don't want to give them any credit because I don't care what they get because they're not, they don't care about me.
And they don't, that's the thing about this. Ultimately, might will make right in their eyes. And do you really think that, you know, the next space race that they're already starting to hype, you know, there's a space race coming. It's going to be China versus US. Who's going to get to Mars first? And whoever plants their flag is going to say they own it and all of this. I mean, it's going to be the same
thing. Doesn't matter what they say. But I this is one thing that's interesting is that The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, a book by Robert Heinlein back in the 60s, was about a penal colony, kind of like Australia was to Europe, you know, but England. But the moon became a penal colony. And then, of course, after you're up there a while, you're stuck. And it developed a culture. And eventually they freed themselves, declared independence from the Earth. Well, they're at the top of the gravity well. So they just, you know, lobbing railgun of, you know, storage containers or shipping containers full of dirt or something. And it's like a freaking meteor. Well, they win, and you know, eventually, you know, and freedom reigns. But I'm going, you know, now I know why that movie. I thought it was an awesome book. It was, yeah, it had artificial intelligence. It had space. It's the moon. It just, you know, there is no way in hell they're gonna, the government's gonna allow that movie to be made because it gets people thinking this way. That was the whole point.
Exactly right. Film Literature, New World Order, number 33. I talked about that with David E. Friedman. So people can go back in the archives for that.
Number 33. The fact that you even remember it. You know, you're the man. Okay.
I have to look it up, but yeah.
Okay, 33. What's the name of it? What was it about?
The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, Film Literature in the New World Order, number 33. Just type Moon is a Harsh Mistress into my search bar. You will find it. I'm talking to David D. Friedman about that book.
You are amazing. You know, that's awesome. Thank you. You know, this is, all right. Davi, I got to get him in here. Hold on. Davi! I just want him to come and just listen to this, the treaty and the Moon is a Harsh Mistress number 33. Damn it. I got to write this stuff down. Freaking James. You know, what is some of the other stuff coming up this year, you think?
Well, obviously, unfortunately, this year is the selection circus cycle. So that's going to dominate all U.S. headlines for the next year. And again, whoever wins, we lose. The politicians win. And I think that's going to be the main thrust of this, which is why I hope you can insert something, some monkey wrenches into that that work.
Oh, we are. You know, this is, I haven't talked to you for a little bit. When was the last time we talked? It was probably...
In like 3 weeks, maybe a month.
Okay. Do you know that Don and I are going on the road? Did I tell you about that? Okay. That what we did, one of the things, the project that we did... Davi's here. Davi, say yo, what's up? Say hello.
Hey, how's it going?
What James is suggesting is that the Space Treaty of 67... We definitely need to read that, get their mindset of how they rule, you know, whatever. Yeah, I'm writing it down. I got it here. Okay. And then episode 33 that James did, Moon is a Harsh Mistress. Yeah, you know,
definitely similar.
Yeah, so that, you know, this mindset. I mean,
the Moon is a Harsh Mistress. I haven't heard the episode.
Yeah, no. So this is really good, and I want to do that. I apologize. I want to make sure he gets up to speed on what we were talking about here. But the what was the other we were just talking about? Oh, yeah. What we're doing is we did 30 states. We had enough DVDs for them to give every legislator a DVD, you know, on vaccinations. You know, just a little bit from a pro, you know, kind of vaccine doctors and research. But they got questions. Stuff happened. They're like, I don't know, man. We're kind of so it wasn't like, you know, this anti-vax thing. That's what they wanted to do. Now, I had some other, you know, TrueStream Media did a thing on censorship, on how it's the First Amendment's gone on the vaccine issue. You can't even freaking talk about it. So did that, and Dr. Nitas from the Cleveland Clinic, which is a very prestigious, you know, wellness clinic, whatever there, and he questioned vaccines in an article, boom, he's fired. And he'd been there like 17 years or some crap. I'm like, whoa, man, these guys are in a hurry. There is something going on. So we did that. Then we have Safe, Second Amendment is for Everyone videos, a five video compilation that has a bunch of Jews for Preservation and Firearm Ownership stuff, like The Gang, which is about the BTAF. Then we had The Second Amendment, which is kind of a primer, you know, a patriot kind of thing, and with George Washington kind of stuff. And then we had No Guns for Negroes, No Guns for Jews, and these were like, you know, why they didn't want them to have guns. And then there was another one. Oh, yeah, Innocence Betrayed, about all the millions, 160 million people that were killed by their own government after they got disarmed. So when we send our stuff, the vaccine stuff, to Virginia, guess what? A bunch I'm sending them, a bunch of the Second Amendment stuff, too. So there is 30 states, or they just got them like this weekend, and it's just, you know, so I already know what's going to happen. And then, of course, we're going to hit the road and start doing this kind of stuff. Because I think you're right. 2020 is it, and I don't want to get caught being a victim of it here, doing kind of, Donna and I were doing this for our grandkids and so on. We'll be spending time with them, but we're on the road for a year. We're going to be, you know, boom, because a lot of times it's tipping point. It's right there. It can go either way. And knowing the impact that we can do and with your material and so on, boom, we can just easily make it go one way or the other. Well, I'm making sure that Berlin Wall comes down with this little bitty rock hammer in Shawshank Redemption. I mean, you know, it's freaking going. So we're working on it. And I think this is the year.
I think you may be right. And at any rate, if we don't try, it won't be the year. It won't be the year for us. Right. So I think we have to insert ourselves in this conversation. And that's the only thing that I'm interested in regarding this selection service, is the ways that we can use the judo move to use the inertia against itself of the system, flailing out in all directions. Hopefully we can, you know, make it stumble off course at the very least.
Have you been reading any of Jacob Hornberger's stuff? He's been writing a lot, you know, like every day, you know?
It's weird because I think I'm subscribed to the feed.
Future Freedom Foundation. Well, he does. Yeah, futurefreedomfoundation.org, FFF.org. He doesn't, he puts it on there, but I don't think he kind of promotes it as much on there. But you just put in FFF.org and you go, you'll see Jacob Hornberger is not in the top six, but it's the first one of the blog posts down. And every day, you know, it's a U.S. and this, and the U.S. did that, and the government that, and the people on every issue. He is definitely building up a library of I said this about that. You know, well, we're going to see him next weekend, not this coming weekend, but next weekend at the Arizona Libertarian Party Convention. That's here. It's in Tucson. So Davi and I are going to go down there, say, yo, what's up? So we'll get to see some debate and, you know, and vote and kind of and stuff.
You know what it is? I've just realized I'm subscribed to their daily articles, but he has a separate blog that isn't part of the daily articles. So I'm subscribed to the whole thing.
No, it's you dig it. It's definitely James stuff, you know, and he's really smart. And this is what's going to, I'm not waiting. I'm not hoping somebody else is going to do something. We're getting ready. We're going on the road and we're going to document it. That's another thing. As we do this, it's one of the things that Davi is going to help me with while he's here. Davi and I have done the artwork and the profile pages and everything for like every social media there is. We have those channels, whatever it is, we got it. Okay, but we don't really use. I don't want to warn them. I'm like, here he comes, and that one's chopped off too. You know, so how useful do you think YouTube is? We start another channel on covering this and then have it bit shoot and do all this other stuff. Should YouTube be included, or is that like a warning?
I guess it depends on your ultimate philosophy. My philosophy is I'm going to use that as an outlet while I can, because it is still the default for 99.9% of the normie population. Everyone goes to YouTube. Plus, it's now built into all the smart TVs and everything. So if you are not on YouTube, you are simply not going to be seen by a lot of the people who I presume you want to be seen by, because you do not just want to preach to the choir. You want this message to get out as widely as possible. Unfortunately, in this day and age, that means you need to interact with the beast. But hopefully you can do so in a way that will actually draw attention to your material when it inevitably gets censored. Unfortunately, the smartest way that they can censor this material is not by outright banning your channel, but by putting you on the shadow bans and algorithmically limiting your reach and all of that, so that people just generally can't find your work.
Okay, now that was something you were talking about too in one of your recent articles, is the truth about shadow banning. Share that with us.
Yeah, I was motivated by an email that I recently received from a listener who said that he noticed just in the last couple of months that I'm not seeing James's work anymore. I'm subscribed to his channel, but I don't get his recommendations. It's not in my feed. What's going on? And he realized that YouTube was essentially just algorithmically limiting my reach. So he wasn't seeing my work anymore. And as a result, he missed me. And so he said, I broke my habit and got on your site directly. And that was, for me, it was an interesting insight that the real insidious nature of shadow banning is that even when we know that they are shadow banning, we know they are manipulating searches and algorithms and all of this, we still go along with it out of inertia because it's my habit. I go to YouTube, I check what's new, whatever is there is what I see is what
you know. I just got a text message from a listener in Canada. and it was a picture of his television. He listens to the show because we live stream on YouTube too. You know, I mean, I never check. I don't care, but you know, it's on there. So you're right. You know, it's in. You know, Donna in around the house. She's doing the live stream from somewhere. Probably most of it YouTube, and he gave me a picture of his screen that says, "Oh, this content is something." You know, I'm not allowed. You know, in Canada, I'm going. All of a sudden, it just happened. Now, I don't know if it repeated or they heard a rejoinder they didn't like or something. I have no idea what the guy didn't look. I don't care, you know. So, but this is definitely going on. And I had another talk with a gentleman from Virginia that he encouraged me to, you know, give attention to the gun stuff going on in Virginia. And I called him and I said, look, man, I got a bunch of DVDs. We just sent to the, I said, oh my God, you called me? I go, yeah. Are you going to distribute these DVDs? I'll hook your butt up, man. So we just sent them hundreds of them. I go, woohoo, go get some. So this is, the street activism is what I know works. This is what I know. It bypasses the man. And if you put all these signs and so on, you know, down around the Capitol and everything, that pisses him off. And this is what we did Monday. Me and another activist, good friend, I always go to the State of the State address. It's a second Monday in January. You go down there and the governor goes this about that to the legislature, and I don't care. So we go in early in the day and we take, and you have to be addressed to each representative and senator, and you have to have a return address on it or they won't deliver it, you know. So I'm going, this one group, they wanted to have, well, we'll put a P.O. box and like some, you know, I don't know. I don't think they're going to do that one. So we made a backup of all those with Donna, you know, her name and address on it. Well, they wanted those. Then I go, of course. So now it's all Ernie, you know, and Donna's stuff. But the so we do all the DVDs and so on, put them in the mail room, and I take a picture of them putting them. Okay, there we did it. Okay, they're out. You know, here we go. And then we go out and we put them on all the cars in the parking lot, in the parking garage, and each of the receptionists at each of the floors of all the departments of the kind of little boom. Wham, it hits. And those are the most effective. It's when the interns and the secretaries and receptionists and all these people get it. It's like, you know, over the weekend, you know, they kind of like, yeah, this is what they said it was, you know. These guys are, so they, the legislators, they were all excited at the end of September when we did the vaccine education summit. Oh yeah, we want to, yeah, we're with you, you know, we're going to, I go, yeah, traitors first. You guys go shining these guys on, and you go screwing them later. You don't be coming up and saying you did, buddy, now, because you're first. Don't think you're getting insulation. Well, then they're kind of, well, I need to kind of pull back because I'm going to run for this, and they want and kind of explained it to me. Then I find out my whole thing against these guys has been ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council. Are you familiar with these guys? So ALEC is a Koch thing, and I had experience with these guys in the early 90s because they wanted the Constitutional Convention, and one of our initiatives was to resend the call for a Constitutional Convention. Well, they freaked out, and they had the President of the Senate pocket veto the bill. And I'm like, what the heck? And I just went on them. I hammered. I'm not stopping until you guys tell me what the hell is going on. The President of the Senate told me, he goes, it was ALEC. And I go, all right. So I got off his ass. But I wanted to know, who the hell is ALEC? Well, then I find out these guys, Soros and Koch, they come together on some war thing. They're all buddies now. If you put Soros and Koch, you know, they got their own little think tank now, so ooh, I feel better now. Then I find out on Zero Hedge that ALEC has been the one that's been doing 1,000 pieces of legislation, 20% of them go in, and they're the ones writing the legislation for mandatory vaccinations. And it's because they are a paid-for lobby firm of whatever, and every single freaking pharmaceutical is on their list, and they've given them bank. And I'm going, this is who we're up against. And it's the left, the right, all of them. It's all a big, giant lie and a con to try and convince us that, well, we got to support this side over that side. And if I don't vote for this one, then a bad legislator. They're all bad. The whole thing is bad. How far off am I?
Oh, no, you're exactly on point. And in fact, particularly on point, I'm just rereading The Most Dangerous Superstition for my anarcho-poco presentation that will be coming up next month, and I need to bone up on this. And
I apologize. I'm not going to be able to see. I'm not going. I have to go to New England, and I'm going to be at the Liberty Forum, and I got to pick up the bus. you know, and all this at that time. So I, you know, it's a, it just worked out that way. I apologize, but I'm going to miss you, man.
Yeah, well, it'll hopefully be recorded and you'll see it eventually. But the point is that authority, the belief in government, is the most dangerous superstition, and government itself does not exist. It only exists in the minds of people who believe in the authority, the false authority of magical people who get to come in and tell people what to do with their bodies and everything else. And that, of course, is the problem. The problem is not bad people in government. The problem is government. And once we get our heads around that concept, we can overthrow the main obstacle to human freedom, the flowering of human freedom, the things that we, you and I, know are possible if we only got these roadblocks out of the way. And the roadblocks, unfortunately, are not just government agents, but the vast majority of people who are willing to go along with it because it's authority and you got to do what
you
they
know-
say.
Since we talked last, and thank you for putting up the episode that we did on, you know, because I got the, because when you're doing the show, you're not really, you know, you're distracted and thinking. When I got to relax and sit there and listen to, you know, me mostly going on, but the, you know, but the thing is that that had such a big impact on me. Is this understanding of what we're up against, this sociopathic kind of tendency. They're taking advantage of our good nature. And I need to steal the people. That's why I want to go around and kind of amp this. Look, man, you're not the bad guy. They're the bad guy. This is how we deal with this. You know, our Freedom 101 thing that I did with L. Neil Smith stuff, you know, that just answers a whole bunch of this stuff, the way that we do this activism. What do you think? You know, you're in Japan. Are you primarily worried about United States? Is it NATO? Is it Western world? Is it the whole world? Are you kind of focused on America as the bad guys?
Well, it's all related, isn't it? And the decline and collapse of the American Empire, at least as it's existed in the post-World War II era, will affect everyone. And that's both from the perspective of the American Empire being the evil aggressors, but also from the perspective of, well, what's going to come in to step into that power vacuum? And, you know, neither is good for the average human being. It's just that people can be made to go along with it because it's easy to see an evil aggressor like the American Empire going around bullying the states, and to see, oh, these guys are against them, so they must be the good guys, because that's the way we've all been programmed and conditioned since childhood through all of our Hollywood productive programming. Well, these are the bad guys, these are the good guys, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. It's always black and white. It's, of course, not like that in reality. It's just a question of which gangsters are seeking to rule over you. But as I see the American Empire starting to collapse, and or at least corrode, toward on the road towards collapse, that will be the big power vacuum that is the thing that creates the incentive for the other thugs and tyrants to step in and try to fill that power vacuum. And that's always, I mean, if anything, at the very least, you can say over the last 7 years of Pax Americana, it's been stable for the developed Western world, right? I mean, relatively so. No major wars and that type of thing.
Nah, no blood slinging bodies up against the fence kind of wars, but they wage every freaking other kind.
Of course, I'm saying in the developed world itself, in the cocoon of Western Europe and North America and
no, Japan. The point that I'm making is that, you know, while they're stripping all of your value of all your retirement, of everything you made over 30, 40 years, that's violence, man. That's like taking your time, which is part of your life. They just take to your life. They take a big giant ladle and they just scoop it out. Yeah. And they go, this is not yours anymore. And they'll do it later and delayed and death taxes and the generation or whatever the hell.
Children and their children that are going to suffer from it the most, which is the most disgusting part of it.
You know? Yeah, no, to think that just because they haven't dropped bombs in Cleveland yet doesn't mean it doesn't look like it got bombed.
Right.
You know, this is it. You know, one thing I wanted Davi to participate in this, because we're going to leave from the inspiration to James Corbett right now, going to start writing letters on this. Think about, you know, we look at Munoz the Harsh Mrs. episode 33 from you. We're looking at the space treaty of I don't care, but I will get their mindset. What do you think it should be? You know, we're capable of, we're over, I've got this asteroid, I, you know, got this corner in the pole of I'm making whatever, and a bunch of lithium crystal off of Europa or whatever the hell, and I'm going to argue what? I'm going to give what verbiage is going to protect me, or I just got to have an eye on
it. I personally would not argue for what it should be. I would only argue against what it should not be. And that's a pretty important distinction, because it is not for you or me to come in and say what should be happening with regard to the exploration or that sort of thing. It should, the only real question, the only question that has any sort of moral relevance is, who gets to step in and stop this or that thing from happening? And in what way and in what context? So who is going to stop, you know, Mr. Asteroid Mining Space Developer from going to that asteroid and mining it and bringing it back? Who and under what authority are they going to stop that from happening? That's the only real question that matters. And unfortunately, if we just leave that to be solved by the status quo answer is going to be, might makes right, and we will stop you because we can stop you.
Okay, now define might. You know, it could be just an agreement of people that a purchasing guild of I'm in the club of I'm not buying your crap. I mean, you know, made in America or China or Japan or somewhere out there. No, we just all agree. Yeah, but it's really cheap. Yeah, I don't care. You know, I mean, it's general public opinion, or it could be with a gun. You know what? I mean, what's your input, Dov? I mean, what do you think that we information we need to start writing?
I guess I'm not sure what the question is. How should what be done?
That we have when an individual leaves the gravity well, we're out and I'm on Mars, or I got an asteroid, whatever. Mm-hmm. The Alliance is going to come in their Space Force cruiser, and they're going to explain it to me. And yeah, you go, no, you can't, because now it's basically going to come down to I got a gun or somebody else is influencing or whatever. But there has to be a moral reason. You know, there has to be a legitimate people take and assume that position because it's really cool for it, turn a phrase or something. You know, no taxation without representation kind of crap. You know, yeah, something. I mean, I'm just wondering.
So the question is, what attitude do we take into space?
Yeah, what do you think, James? Is it an attitude?
I think essentially this is the prime example, the prime case for Lockean homesteading principles, is it not? Outer space is not homesteaded yet. You don't homestead it, it's yours. The principle that has guided people for hundreds of years, at least theoretically.
Yeah.
Well, it's time to put that into practice as we start to head out into space.
I keep thinking of it in terms of like Robinson Crusoe, because the first people out into space are the ones who are needing to go out and kind of tame the wilderness. You know what I mean? And they when you read into rights theory and all these ideas, you get into this dilemma where like someone who's alone on an island doesn't have to worry about property rights. It's really like they have a different attitude because they're in a completely pragmatic environment. And so the first people who go out into space, the first people who colonize and find resources that they can sustain themselves
with, to breathe
and eat, they're in such a pragmatic environment that it's hard to infuse principle without wanting to violate it when it becomes necessary for some reason.
To not die.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's why I feel like any answer to this is aesthetic. Any answer to this question of what attitude should we have in space, like I would say that being explicit with other people about your boundaries is really important. But I can't say you have a moral obligation to be explicit with people about your boundaries.
Like, well, you know, that's, you know, if you got a boundary, James, well, what is that boundary? I mean, you're going, I don't want to be threatened, I don't want to be coerced, I don't, and then they all of a sudden the big giant 60-foot rocket lands over there on the horizon, and I don't care, or hey, I can see you, you're too close. I mean, you start getting into this subjective thing, and that's where homesteading here was, is that you could homestead and call yours that which you could improve or something like that. What was the idea of that?
Yeah, absolutely none of this is different in outer space than it is on Earth. It's only different in the pragmatic sense of what is physically possible in space. And that, of course, remains to be seen. Unfortunately, the real problem with all of this is that the only people at this point who have the resources to effect any of this in reality are the big nation states or the multi-billionaires. And unfortunately, that seems to be the people who are most likely to start going out and colonizing space, unless more people join the pirate movement and working together are able to help move this technology for the people and actually use it for our own purposes than wait for the nation state to go out there and do it for us.
It's going
to
happen. I give you an example. Musk goes to Mars. It's 25 years later. They're starting to get kind of stable. People are accumulating capital in the form of oxygen and water and whatever the heck. And they go, yeah, we're outside of your collective, this piece of crap, you know, dome living of whatever, and we're going over here. So they go on the mountain range on the other side, and we're over here now. Well, is it going to develop to the point to go, oh, you're not allowed, or you're taking the smartest people, and they need to be here? It's going to be the same reason and justification, you know, because we need, so therefore we can force an individual to whatever we need, and the collective means more than the individual or whatever. So this is what we take with us. It's these justifications, and somebody put me in charge. I got a shiny badge, and oh, by the way, I got a gun. So it just, I need to kind of, you know, as we do this and we write this letter, and it's really about property. You know, it's going to be property and my property. So when we do that, there we need to address this in such a way that we make it clear, yeah, we gone pirate and we be in space, boy, girl. We're not, you know, we're not taking your crap. Because we just had last week, Vivian is, Davi's working with them on making the Orville fan game. And they've gone real pirate on this thing. And when you have the copyright and Disney, well, you're not allowed to get, screw you. The crew on the Orville came on the Precariat and we blew it up. And now we're all pirates in space and screw you. You know, which is certainly, once they get that attitude up here, go ahead and screw with this. We just go pirate. I love that. What do you think, Dob? Is that kind of what they'll do?
It's like, what I love about the Orville game is that we win no matter what happens. Like, if the studio does nothing and they let us use their intellectual property and they never give us a cease and desist, we win because we make a cool game where we're infusing this Orville franchise with these pirate ideas. If they send us a cease and desist and the studio says, you can't use our intellectual property, well, we just got a kick-ass space pirate game, right? So it's like, either way,
it's the attitude.
It's just publicity. But the thing is that what I'm really hoping comes across is that the writers of the game have this attitude. We are colonizing space in this game. There are places in space that the Orville show hasn't gone yet. We're going there. We're claiming them. We're building species they haven't built yet. And hopefully the player kind of recoils and says, oh my God, you're violating intellectual property rights. Like, yes, the writers themselves have the attitude of just do it.
So this, it's an attitude. You say going to space is an attitude. What do you think that attitude should be, James?
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that. Everyone will have their own answer for that, and I'm not here to give that motivation to people. Some people are just interested in exploration. Some people are only interested in getting some resources from outer space and bringing them home. I'm not here to adjudicate on people's motivations.
But well, it's going to be the same motivation.
Is the same ethical principles that stand on Earth stand in outer space as humans move out there. I mean, it's the same thing. There's no distinction whatsoever.
Yeah. I'm thinking that there's a root truth to all this stuff. You know, it's like Declaration of Independence. You know, there's phraseology there. There's phraseology in great articles. There's phraseology in a lot of your reporting. And there's a phrase, you know, it's always kind of, yeah, that. You know, that. That's what inspires people. You know, it's just a truth. A fundamental truth. And the fundamental truth that I'm really coming to grips with is that we are always better. It's like Most Dangerous Superstition book that you're rereading. It's if we can abandon that, you know, then space is the limit. I mean, it's just so, I mean, what would be the worst that would happen without government? We'd have like a big riot or something instead of a war. I mean, what happens when you don't have a government in charge of you?
That's a good question, and that's for humanity to answer.
Woohoo! I mean, let's find out.
I sleep better.
You know, they talk about the Dark Ages. That's one thing I'm starting to find out as we were doing a lot of the research on the pirate stuff, too, is the Dark Ages weren't really that dark. What they didn't want, this is Max Egan's stuff, man. He's always going, he goes, look, what they don't want you to know is that how prosperous and peaceful everybody was. There was no history. Because there was no wars. You know, and then you got the church coming in and saying, oh, no, this is what happened. And this is, you know, it's just, we don't know what the real history was because there we're rediscovering it all the time, finding out that they are lying.
Yeah, as always. Exactly right. And that's kind of the point of all of this, isn't it? I mean, what humanity would look like without a government. Some things would be great. Some things would be horrible. So there'd be a lot of mixture because humans are a mixture. And that's ultimately the point. It is what humans make of it. And but the point is, do we have the expression to be human beings and to express that and to live up to what it is to be a human being, or will we be controlled automatons moving into the future? And that's the ultimate vision that I think Agenda 2030 ... is ultimately about, is about moving us into a state where we are essentially biological robots.
You know, I got a response from a listener on our show that we did last, and it was, you talked about Walden 2, okay? And I wasn't familiar with that. I didn't know you were talking. I thought it was like, Thoreau wrote another book or something. I mean, I had no idea what the hell it was about. And then I went and looked at the wiki because somebody, a listener was, you know, commenting on it, and it had an impact on them, and they, you know, whatever. So I went and looked at the way I'm going, whoa, I did not know this book existed. Would you explain to the audience what it's about and what
it
means?
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
So B.F. Skinner, I don't know what year it was written, I'd have to look that up, but B.F. Skinner wrote a novel about this ideal colony that was created, whereby
was 60s,
children would be conditioned from birth via various methods to make them perfectly suited for their role in society, which would be predetermined for them. And this was all about this, putting it in a fictional context in a novel, so that you could see the way this type of utopia could function. And this shouldn't be surprising at all, because, of course, this is explicitly what B.F. Skinner and the behaviorists were all about.
It was published in 48.
It's kind of novel format, which makes it kind of strange.
It was 48.
Yeah.
So, it's the same time as Orwell, as 84, because 84 was the reverse of 48. That's why he did it, right? So it's the same time. Now, Walden 2 was it for or against this? Was it warning, or was it showing how it could happen?
Skinner was definitely for it. I mean, there are complications in the book that I'd have to go back and reread. But no, ultimately the idea is that this is a better way of doing things, and this is what he was about. In fact, Skinner famously even experimented on his own daughter, keeping her in a Skinner box and all this sort of stuff.
What?
It wasn't any child abuse. He was just experimenting.
We were just experimenting.
It was
informed consent.
No. It's like school's not a. It's not child abuse. It's institutional. Okay. The community. The novel describes an experimental community called Walden 2. The community is located in a rural area and has nearly 1,000 members. It encourages its members to view every habit and custom with an eye to possible improvement and to have a constantly experimental attitude towards everything. Then it goes on. They're talking about how they conditioned people, you know, that their whole thing for this to work was from birth to be conditioned to accept it. That was the point. And I can see that that's what a lot of people, when they look at this,
that contradicts the first thing you said. Like, if everybody's conditioned to fulfill their little role in the cog of the machine, how can everybody be moving forward with a view of questioning the tradition and improving it?
Because their whole questioning and condition to improve it was to improve the community and not the individual. You know, that was their, it depends what your goal is, you know, and their goal is the community, the collective. That's what, that's how you can tell a statist, collectivist, or whateverist, you know, it's not a most, it is the dangerous superstition. You know, this is what's going on. In 2020, with your efforts and a lot of, you know, people, what we're doing and the technology, I can see why those are censoring everything, cutting everything, shadow banning everything. Is that effective, or does that build up more animosity? Does it make our argument more credible? Are they just looking to push it one more election cycle? Are they looking to, you know, they need more time to get their, you know, dial to turn you into a drooling idiot? I mean, you know, what do you think their purpose for amping this up now is?
I would encourage people to go and watch that video I did on the truth about shadow banning, where I get into Edward Bernays and his, I think it was 1928 book on propaganda, which starts by saying that the organized, that the control of the organized habits and opinions of society represents a controlling mechanism that is the true the ruling power of the country. And that is so important for people to understand. It is about your habits and opinions and how they are shaped. And that is the angle of attack that I am most concerned about. I am least concerned about outright censorship, banning you or banned off this platform, because that is out there, open. It makes it explicit. Suddenly, however many people follow you will all suddenly see what's happening and will know what's happening. the most insidious thing they can do is all of the different side attacks that they can do, like search engine manipulation, like algorithmic manipulation, like shadow banning, like ultimately, as I've talked about before, I did a video called the We Need to Talk About Search, which it makes the point that our concept of what it means to search for information today is going to change, not because of anything that's anyone that's going to come with a gun to your head to tell you to search differently, but because the technology itself is going to be increasingly designed so that the privileges that we enjoy right now of actually controlling what we do with our computers will start to be chipped away at, so that ultimately a computer is not going to be a physical thing that resides on your desktop with a keyboard that you input material into. It is going to be essentially a little vending machine that you hold in your hand or maybe implant in your brain eventually that will do the thinking for you. And so you will say, computer, tell me about 9/11. And it will say, on September 11, 2001, Osama bin Laden directing men, blah, blah, blah. It will
just
say,
don't ask and don't forget.
Possibility to do what we do now, which is to refine a search or to exclude certain search terms. That control will be taken out of our hands quite literally. And that to me is the most important part of all of it.
You know, I want to give people a real life example that I experienced with my children. When they, you know, they're starting to go to school in the early 90s and so on. And we wanted to give them, you know, a good, you know, I had World Book encyclopedias when I was a kid, and you know, and I, you know, you go to E to look up for something on whatever, you know, T for trains, and then you know, a half hour later, you forgot what the heck you were looking for because you're off, you know, like surfing the encyclopedia. You know, you get distracted, you know, with it, and you get some information that way. But what happens was we gave them, it was Microsoft had a encyclopedia on CDs. So I go, well, this is cool. We'll, you know, we'll get that. That'll be, you know, use the computer and search for whatever. It was so homogenized. It was so pasteurized. It was so much crap. And it wasn't like they didn't have room. I mean, they could have more room. But then, you know, think about it. You got like, I don't know, 20-whatever editions, 30 or something like that, you know, depending on your bookshelf, you know, how many editions you get at Britannica or something. And it's 20 years later, and you got so much more information, but it's the same number of pages. What happened? Why happened to all the, you know, the information, the old stuff? Something had to be given, you know, pasteurized, put down into a paragraph, edited down to something, make room for whatever. So you just kept losing stuff. Well, then when we did the best thing that we had, we also had all of National Geographic's on disk. And you went to every, it was a page by page, PDFs of everything. You could search the text and everything. I was like, that was cool. You know, that you could get a lot of geography and you get a lot of stuff, National Geographic on that. So that was more effective and useful than the encyclopedia from Microsoft. When you did that, and I'd look at that, I'm going, this is crap. We threw them away after less than a year. It was the biggest piece of crap. And now it's getting worse. They did. It was the same kind of people doing the same kind of stuff, and now they're trying to do it through the internet. And this is, it's not that they're, you know, the information's not there, and where it is, like you go watch James Corbett stuff, you're not allowed. What? Who is this? What is their ultimate goal? You see my point? These are the questions that I ask.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, this isn't a big mystery. This isn't difficult to comprehend. This has been written about since, hey, 1948 with 1984 and the memory hole. The whole point is to control the past so that you control the present and control the future. The access to information, as well as the information itself, is absolutely vitally important in controlling the population. Every tyrant throughout history has understood this. This is why they used to do the outright book burnings and all of that. And that's why the book burnings of the 21st century are such things as when Kindle decides that your version of 1984 is unauthorized and they yank it. But don't worry, they'll put a bit of money back in your account to refund you for it. But yes, literally, you remember that story from a couple years ago. They literally book burned 1984. They memory holed it for a bunch of Kindle users.
You know, there was a... You know, the one thing that the Crown always had is kind of the steam valve. For some reason, it seems like it's a court jester. You know, it's a comedian. And then all of a sudden you have a comedian becomes president of Ukraine. You know, I'm
or
going,
the United States.
Or Italy.
Or the United States. So, you know, so this is, there's something going to break this year. And I think it's because it's nearing the end game. There's a desperation on they, them, those. There's an awareness of the people. And there's a battle that's going on right now. And I'm wondering, what's the form it's going to take? Because it's like in Virginia right now here in the United States. They're like, Democrats took over the House and Senate, I guess, and the government, whatever. They got, you know, enough chutzpah and enough confidence that they're going to, we're going to ban guns in Virginia. Now's the time. Well, then you got all these sheriffs deputizing people. They said, all right, well, our county doesn't have it. You got sanctuary counties and cities and everything. You look at the map, and it's the teeny tiny little pieces of we control the legislature in Virginia. And I'm going, did they bite off more? Or is this, you know, they're just going to do it? And it doesn't matter, even if they just did it. There's a bunch of people, they don't give a care crap if they just did it. It's the law. You know, I don't know. What do you think's going to happen? You've been watching this from afar.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm a Canadian in Japan, so take everything that I have to say about what's happening domestically in the United States with a gigantic grain of salt. But I am not feeling particularly optimistic. I'm not feeling the Levolution in the air this year. I don't know if you are. I hope you are, but I don't see it online at any rate.
No, I don't. It's taken the form of tit, trusting Trump, you know, but it's there. And of course it's there. It's always there. It's just, you know, if it can be, you know, directed, if it can be, you know, just fed. See, a lot of people, they want to have, this is the battle that's going on in the vaccine movement. I can see it now because I don't go on Facebook and I don't care. You know, I'm just take care of my own thing and how can I help anybody? Then I have when you start helping all these people, ooh, no, pick us. No, pick us. No, pick us. We're the database of the head thing everybody signed up to get to the what. You know, this is like, no, not them. They're not good. We're the ones. You know, I'm going, whoa, I've been through this before. And I'm going, no, whenever that happens, I just help everybody. Because I'm going, you know, at least somebody's off their butt. You know, I don't give a crap. You know, I'll help you. You're helping them and not, wow, is it that bad? When it gets to that point, that's when you start having the overwhelming because there's all this market out there somebody's trying to consolidate. And a lot of times, a lot of these groups are the bad guys or they're going to be taken over by the bad guys or they're infiltrated by the bad guys or whatever. So that's why I don't pick. You know, I'm just like, no, we have information. Here's a James Corbett video you made 10,000 copies of and peace out, you know. So this is the kind of thing that I see before the Ron Paul Levolution. Nobody saw it then either. They're like, what the hell? He's some old guy from who the hell's Ron Paul? They didn't see it. And I go, why didn't you see it? What were you paying attention to? I got the exact same feeling this time for this. That's why we're doing this. Because I'm going to show James and everybody else, I'm going, if you're looking at the right thing, which is what? Understanding. That's it. You just go, okay, I get it. You know, somebody said...
I hope you're right. I hope you're right. But the one difference between 2020 and 2008 is that we have had the Levolution now. We've seen that. It's played out. It's happened. It was politically squelched, and we've moved on from that now. So that is history. That is rearview mirror stuff. So now it's going to be an even harder sell because people are going to look at what happened and go, no, I'm not on that losing team, that Ron Paul nonsense. No, I'm on the Trump train. Yeah, we're going to win this way. And
you don't want those people.
It's also that the establishment has learned from those tactics.
Right. Like, that's why
so
they're
much
banning
was unprecedented in the Ron Paul campaign, especially the 2008. That like now, like if you look at campaigns now, it's like he revolutionized the way that people grassroots organize online, and now like most of the Democratic candidates are trying to emulate that.
They
so,
can't. See, that's
I know
one
that
thing.
They can't, but it's like they learn from every success that we have, and so if it's not a complete success, it's like feeding the enemy tactics.
Now, I think that everybody's always fighting the last war. So what happens is, that's why we're going to the street. You know, these DVDs are sitting there burning a hole in my pocket, 25,000 of them for freaking years. Of course, I've done hundreds of thousands, but I had these left just for this, just to demonstrate. And it's also going to be antiquated technology, but they're cheap. You know, they're free since I have them, but I mean, they're cheap.
They're going to win the next war. Not by fighting the last war, but by fighting the last war.
Right. Well, no, the goal is the same. War. You know, to me, is the goal has always been the same, is that you get stuff in front of people. Right now, I was talking to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. She's a big activist in this field that I didn't know. I mean, you haven't talked to Sherry? Who's Sherry? Oh, she's been around since 2000. She's the head, you know, person in charge of, oh, my God. And I'm going, cool, well, let's talk to her. I have her on. You haven't heard of me? I go, God, You're assuming I looked. I mean, I don't care. You know, I'm doing, you know, stuff here and help, and I'll help you. You go, Cleveland, yeah, I'm there. We're done. We're best friends. Because I don't care. You know, these guys want to join the team that's going to beat Big Pharma. And I'm going, you're not going to beat Big Pharma that way. You think you're going to outspend them? You're going to out-organize? You're going to out-control the stable of legislators? Do you think? It's not going to be that way. It is going to be mother and father and grandma and grandpa and aunt and uncle and brother and sister and friends that are just pissed off. And they are looking for an opportunity to express themselves and have an impact. And I'm going, I want to help.
Boom. Okay, one last point that I want to make, and then I got to go. But my last point would be that I think the key to doing what you want to do and to getting in front of people on the street and in their face and in real life and handing them physical DVDs and all of that, the key to that will be to leverage and to amplify people's distrust of what they're seeing online. Because just in the vaccine arena, you go on the front page of Reddit, and all you're going to see is these stupid anti-vaxxers and entire subreddits devoted to this making the front page every single day. And until you can get people to understand that what they are seeing on the front page of Reddit and all these other normie mainstream places that are the alternative online, right, is itself a corporate big pharma-funded operation to basically get people organically grassroots on board with their corporate goals. Until you can break through that conditioning, I think you're going to have a big problem, because people are going to say, oh, they, you know, all the cool kids on Reddit think this is stupid, right. So I think it's stupid. You have to understand that and then get in front of their face.
That happens on its own. That just happens, you know, person to person.
I'd love to believe that.
I had this exact...
I recommend, it's a good thing to see the conditioning. Just go on the front page of Reddit every day and just make a note of the anti-vax stuff.
I've had this exact same conversation before I went on the Levolution Trail. And it was with the discussion group that we'll be going to next week here. And I gave this presentation in November on the pirate thing and why we were doing that. And this last month, there was another speaker, and I did a short presentation, and I'm going, yep, we're doing on this thing on vaccines. Now, of course, all these doctor lawyers and, you know, judges and think tanks and all these guys going, oh, crazy Ernie again. Well, a few of them, you know, three or four of them going, yeah, you know, Ernie's right on the kind of, you know, put some thudding in the other guys. Going, what? You know, we're not, you know, Ernie's not the only crazy guy. Well, I'm going, I just want you guys to remember, for the past 25 years that I've known you, you guys have always said that about everything that I've done. And I go, how's my batting average? And I go,
yeah, exactly.
This is what's coming. You're going to, man, it's going to just, I want everybody. So it was everybody except this person, and this person out of these 25 people here that said Ernie batshit crazy, right? I just want to make sure. You know, tape, please, because I know that when time goes on, it's a year from now, that's why we need a whole year, May to May, I'm going to prove to my favorite person that needs to be demonstrated the faith in just information and people getting off their butt and the law of attraction and the power of just freaking doing it. Quantum reality, willing it into existence, is going to be James freaking Corbett, and I'm get to go na 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 na.
I will be the first person to gladly keep my hat with a bucket full of salt.
I want to put a smile on your face.
I want to see that, and I'm glad that you have that faith. And if we didn't have that faith, we wouldn't be here talking right now. Anyway, would we?
Yeah.
I mean, there is a point to what we're doing, and we have to believe in that. So, hats off,
James. Thank you very much. Give out all your favorite web pages. Go see you and stuff. Do it.
CorbettReport.com, CorbettReport.com is the only website you need to visit ever.
And check out Phoenix Phoenix every now and then. James Corbett, thank you very much. Thanks for hanging out, Davi.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank
Peace,
you,
guys.
Bye-bye.